All right, the committee will come to order. There's a quorum present. And today up for our bills. Today we have House File 2865, Representative Whalen. Representative Whalen, welcome to the committee. I'll go ahead and move House File 2865 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education, Policy, and Finance. So that bill is before us. Representative Whalen, I also understand that you have a DE2 amendment. I will move the DE2 amendment. Representative Whalen, is there any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Representative Whalen could just tell us what it is before we vote on it.
Representative Liebling, Representative Whalen will describe the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. It's mostly technical corrections. There were a couple of definitions that we wanted to just make more clear. So staff, I know, would be happy to walk us through the technical corrections. There were just some drafting errors with missing a couple zeros as we are changing an allocation. And so that is purely technical. And then the some of the word changes we changed. The on page 3, instead of having it describe the babies that die of natural causes, is just the clearest way we thought we could say that, and so we just amended that to say babies that die of natural causes. And there were a couple other one word changes as well, and again, and I think staff would be happy to walk us through that if we need to.
All right. If any staff is available to do that, that would be great. I don't know who handled that, but Mr. Gehring, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Matt Gehring from the House Research Department. I worked with Representative Whalen on drafting this amendment. So the technical changes she mentioned are to the numbers that you see on page 1. And page 2 as well is just updating the numbers to correctly reflect the appropriation changes that are being substantively made on page 3. The changes Representative Whalen mentioned about the definitional changes are on page 3. Mine's 3.18 to 3.30 is really the substantive requirement that the university create the Fetal Tissue Research Center. And as Representative Whalen mentioned, what's different in the DE2 here is that we updated some phrasing to provide that the Fetal Tissue Research Center would oversee procurement of fetal tissue for use in research activities. That's on 3.26. And then on 3.28 to 3.30, the center would be required to only use fetal tissue if the tissue is available due to the natural death of the fetus. Okay. And that's a substantive change compared to the underlying bill.
Okay. Got it. And outside of that, there are numbers and technical changes. That's the policy change. All right.
And there was a one-word change on line 6. Was it 6.22? From needed to required to request. Is that in 3.3? Yeah, so 3.22, the word request there, formerly that said required. 3.22.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you, Representative Whalen. Thank you, Mr. Gehring, for describing the DE2 amendment. Any further discussion to the DE2 amendment? Seeing no other discussion, all those in favor of adoption of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Whalen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. I'm here before you today because of a series of unfortunate events that began last summer when several undercover videos brought to light the horrific trafficking of aborted babies' organs. Regardless of your feelings on the videos or abortion itself, no one's denying that in our nation and in our state, the buying and selling of aborted babies is occurring. When it came to light that Colorado University was participating in this, a colleague asked me if I knew whether or not the University of Minnesota was. I serve on the Higher Ed Committee, and I'm actually U of M alum. I didn't know the answer to that, so we started looking. Please understand me when I say I did not ask to be thrust into this controversy. It happened to me. And last year, when legislators and other staff inquired as to whether or not the university was participating in this, the immediate response was no. It was not until an undercover investigation by Alpha News that we learned the opposite is in fact true. And now the university has done a complete 180. Not only do they participate in buying and researching unaborted babies' organs, but they are ardently defending it as critical and groundbreaking. As I reflected on this issue, I began to feel what I imagine that William Wilberforce must have felt when he was battling the slave trade. He said something about the slave trade that summarizes my own feelings on the trade of babies' organs. When I consider the magnitude of the subject which I am to bring before the House, it is impossible for me not to feel both terrified and concerned at my own inadequacies for such a task. I, and members, I mean I am putting this in my own voice, mean not to accuse anyone, but to take the shame upon myself, in common, indeed, with the whole Parliament of Great Britain, or in our case, the legislature of Minnesota, for having suffered this horrid trade to be carried on under our authority. We are all guilty. We ought all to plead guilty and not to exculpate ourselves by throwing the blame on others. Wilberforce spent much of his career trying to educate people on the horrors of the slave trade. And in Great Britain, many had turned a blind eye. I believe that's what we are doing here in Minnesota and in the United States with regards to this trade. For far too long, we have allowed babies to be torn apart in their mothers' wombs and then their limbs to be sold to researchers. To quote one of my counterparts in Wisconsin, Representative Andre Jacques, who is actually testifying later, we are degrading the victim's human dignity in the most callous and gruesome ways imaginable during their dismemberment, like cutting through the still-living aborted children's faces to harvest their brains. Furthermore, we hear of demands made by researchers to, quote, make it so we don't know what it is, with requests like, we need limbs, but no hands and feet need to be attached, as if to dull their conscience. Before delving into the issues before us today, I want to emphasize something. I love the University of Minnesota. I hold 2 degrees from the university. I spent several months there working in a campus ministry. And furthermore, as to medical research, right now, one of my family members is participating in a clinical drug trial for cancer at the University of Minnesota. I say all this to say if anyone has cause to want to work with and promote the work of the University of Minnesota, I do. I believe the university does great work, and my hope and prayer is that we can come together on a compromise, for I believe the university and the legislature can work together in this, to find a way to procure fetal tissue ethically within the bounds of our laws, specifically from babies that die of natural causes, which is something they themselves have admitted they'd like to be able to do. And to that end, my bill appropriates $1 million to the university to establish a fetal tissue research center to, among other things, find a way to procure this tissue from babies that die of natural causes. The university could be a national leader in this, a trendsetter, in finding ways to do this research ethically. Before I move on to my other testifiers, I would like to just outline 5 main reasons I believe this bill is important. First, the university misled lawmakers, or they were grossly negligent in seeking an answer to lawmakers, which appears to be a symptom of deeper systemic issues, as highlighted by a 2015 report from a legislative auditor. Last summer, when staff and legislators asked university officials if they did this research, as I mentioned earlier, the response was no. And the Star Tribune article actually quotes an email from the university that, as long as the vice president for research isn't aware of anything, I think we could avoid a formal statement and just let journalists know the answer is no. No point giving them a senior leader quote when a one-word answer will do. I asked in the Higher Education Committee if this issue had been resolved, if they had uncovered the specific reason, the root cause of that miscommunication. And after all these months, they still could not tell me specifically what happened. And so while they have said that they have new policies and procedures in place to prevent these things from occurring in the future, I question how effective those policies can be if they still are not sure how the initial miscommunication occurred in the first place. There also is a question of whether or not new policy changes are enough to bring about real change because, again, as mentioned, there seems to be a lot of other problems at play here. In a 2015 report done by the legislative auditor on the Dan Markinson suicide, and Dan Markinson was part of a psychiatric drug trial, the report found that, quote, the insular culture at the university has shown that it will not address these issues. This culture, manifested in current leadership, will prevent any restoration of public trust. Unfortunately, as we learned earlier this month in the House Higher Education Committee, this still seems to be the case. Specifically, we heard several people, including professors at the university, testify of how horribly they and others were treated by university officials when they were bringing forth their concerns on the Dan Markinson case. A quote from the Minnesota Daily, the student paper at the university, summarized the issue well. Despite assurances by university leaders and officials, some lawmakers said they are skeptical about the school's promises, especially after testimony by longtime critics. I want to believe everything you have said, said Representative Cindy Pugh, but I can't unhear what I heard previously. After both sides presented, I asked the university if they'd be willing to implement one of the recommendations from the OLA report that the Office of the Ombudsman should be monitoring the psychiatric drug trials. The university pushed back, saying that in their conversations with the ombudsman, which I appreciate that they had those conversations, but to the best of their recollection, both parties believe a, quote, unofficial capacity is best. So I asked legislative auditor Jim Nobles this similar question, and his response was that he actually does still think that an official outside oversight is needed. In fact, in regard to the Markinson case, Auditor Nobles has said, my only hope is that the legislature is involved and will stay involved. Even after a year of follow-up on this, Auditor Noble still stands by that recommendation, and to me that says there is a pretty large issue here with the University of Minnesota. So I'm pleased that some of the progress we've seen within the Board of Regents, in order to really establish public trust, we need to do something more. The second main issue here is that in my view, and in the view of many others, the university violated and is still in violation of Minnesota statutes. No one is in dispute over the fact that the university has purchased and researched on aborted fetal tissue, as Alphanews originally uncovered in October. Specifically, the university has conducted research on pancreas, lungs, thymus, and livers purchased from Advanced Bioscience Resources, spanning back from 2008 to 2014. According to the article from October, the most recent blanket purchase order was in August of 2015. And an audit released last week from Heron Consulting, which the university hired, confirms the purchase of these tissues. Though their scope was quite limited, they don't show purchase costs, they don't show, and they only go back to 2010. But in addition, I would like to point out that that report defined all human fetal tissue, including that obtained from a stillbirth and from a spontaneous abortion or miscarriage, which my bill would allow, to be clear. I just would like to keep, and there's continued debate on this, but we are talking, there is a big distinction between induced abortion and that of babies that die of natural causes, or spontaneous abortion. So two primary statutes surrounding this issue, along with legislative intent, point to the conclusion again that I and many others hold, research on electively aborted babies in Minnesota is against the law, and a plain reading of this, of our fetal disposition law, clearly shows the university was in violation of that statute. Quote from statute 145.1621, hospitals, clinics, and medical facilities in which abortions are induced or occur spontaneously or accidentally, and the laboratories to which the remains of human fetuses are delivered, must provide for the disposal of the remains by cremation, interment burial, or in a manner directed by the Commissioner of Health. The hospital, medical facility, or laboratory may complete laboratory tests necessary for the health of the woman or her future offspring or for purposes of a criminal investigation to or determination of parentage prior to disposing of the remains. So very clear distinctions on what that can be used for. And given this plain reading and the fact that the university has admitted they have disposed of fetal remains as biohazard waste, they clearly broke the law. Furthermore, the use of the words must and only in the relevant language from the law regarding disposition that, quote, remains of a fetus must be deposited and disposed of only at the place and manner provided in this section, make it clear that the legislature considered the unnamed possibility of research and meant to say no to it and all other means of handling fetal tissue besides those provided under the statute. The second law in question is Minnesota's Anatomical Gift Statute, 525A, which defines a descendant from which organs can be taken as a deceased individual whose body or part is or may be the source of an anatomical gift. The term includes a stillborn infant or an embryo or fetus that has died of natural causes in utero. Combine this with Minnesota Statute 645.19, provisos shall be construed to limit rather than to extend the operation of the clauses to which they refer. Exceptions expressed in a law shall be construed to exclude all others. So, therefore, unless a baby dies of natural causes, it cannot be donated as an anatomical gift. While the university has implemented a new policy that they will only obtain fetal tissue from other states, I would say they're still in violation of the law, because just like it would be illogical for the legislature to limit individuals from smoking marijuana if they smoke it from other states, it would be illogical to limit the use of fetal tissue from induced abortion in Minnesota, but not those from other states. The intent of the regulation is on the disposition of the fetal remains based on the cause of death, not on the location of that death. Finally, the lineage of the statutes also makes clear that the case the legislature intended to prohibit electively aborted fetal tissue. If we look in 1969, when the Anatomical Gift Act was passed, it was before Roe v. Wade, so clearly would not have allowed abortion, babies that died from abortion. And then after Roe v. Wade until 1991, there was more discrepancy, but in 1991, the legislature limited the donation to a stillborn infant or an embryo or fetus that died in utero of natural causes. This was further clarified in 2007. So, moving to the third point, and I do appreciate your indulgence, this is a lot of information. There is much disagreement in the scientific community about the value of this research. As the university spent a lot of time defending the value of this research in a recent House Higher Education Committee, it's prudent here to address the controversy within the scientific community on the value of this research. I'd like to say I love science and I'm all for research, ethically and within the bounds of the law. And to begin with this, when we're talking about the research, most of the words we hear on aborted fetal tissue research are promise, potential. There have been, as of yet, no cures to any diseases from aborted fetal tissue research. We have several experts here today that will testify to the issue, but I would just like to address a few points. The university referenced work that they had done with aborted fetal tissue to figure out when to administer drugs to HIV-positive mothers to prevent transmission to babies. And in response, I'd like to read just an excerpt of testimony that you have in your packet from Dr. David Prentice. He notes that there were several papers on this issue in the 1990s, and the seminal papers referenced as the definitive studies that guided the timing of the antiretroviral drug treatment to prevent viral transmission to the unborn and newborn are the ones that are referenced in regards to timing for drug treatment by a University of Minnesota professor considered one of the leaders in drug treatment for HIV-infected mothers. The use of fetal tissue in determining timing is not supported by the literature. Furthermore, when we are discussing Alzheimer's research, when this same topic was being discussed in Wisconsin, one of the longtime public policy advocates for the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance in Wisconsin, Rob Gunderman, said he was shocked by the repeated assertions of a doctor that aborted children's tissue held the key to finding a cure for Alzheimer's. Addressing the issue of aborted fetal tissue, he stated, quote, I have never in my 17 years had a researcher tell me that this was a viable path to a cure. In fact, I've heard them say the opposite. They don't believe it's a viable path to a cure for Alzheimer's. This is confirmed by the Alzheimer's Association, which says it supports any legitimate avenues of research and hope that it offers a cure, but has not received a request to fund a project involving fetal tissue in 7 years, according to the association's chief scientific officer, who also says this really tells us the field has moved to newer and reprogrammed cells. And I could go on there, but I will go to my fourth point, which is that this is a very small segment of everything the university does. In fact, my bill in no way would limit the university's competitive edge. As we found from the Huron report, only 8 researchers are doing this out of over 2,000, which is less than 1%. And according to initial estimates given to lawmakers, we're talking about 5 ounces of tissue over 10 years. So to quote my colleague, Representative Marianne O'Neill, we're going to hold them to their desire to do this research from babies that die of natural causes. They've said that they would like to be able to do that. And the university protests would be very hard to procure this tissue ethically, which to me should never be a reason not to do something ethically. Others can testify that, and I'll have them testify on other avenues and paths that we have in the scientific community for doing this. Finally, to the fifth point, the University of Minnesota receives millions of dollars from Minnesotans, many of whom are pro-life and who do not want their tax dollars going to any organization that would support the trafficking of aborted babies. It fuels the abortion industry. Indeed, Natalia Holtz, a microbiologist, wrote in a New York Times article that, quote, harvesting human fetal organs is part of a widespread and lucrative business. And yet, as referenced, the scientific community holds varying opinions as to the value of the research. To quote Dr. Maureen Condit, an associate professor of neurobiology and anatomy at the University of Utah School of Medicine, quote, progress is being made in the use of stem cell therapies against cancer, blindness, Alzheimer's, heart disease, HIV, and diabetes, but the vast majority of this progress relies not on fetal tissue, but on the use of stem cells that are isolated from birth-related material and or adult tissue. There is an important difference between a need and a market for aborted fetal tissue. Given the 5 reasons outlined, I do believe it's the duty of the legislature to act. And given the university's history in failing to adequately address issues within their research department, I do believe this bill is necessary. So a brief summary of my bill, and then I'll hand it over to the testifiers. The Minnesota Daily actually summarized the bill pretty well. It's giving $1 million to fund a fetal tissue research center that would allow the procurement of tissue from babies that die of natural causes and oversee all research activities regarding human fetal tissue, ensuring legal and ethical compliance with policies and laws in place. In addition, it does withhold $14 million from the university until the Board of Regents certifies to the Commissioner of Management and Budget that this research facility is operational and funded, the Fetal Tissue Research Center. And that $14 million specifically is a withholding from a $30 million appropriation we had given to the medical school to, among other things, expand their research capacity. $15 million of it has already been released in fiscal year 16, and $15 million of it would be released in fiscal 17. So the $15 million, $1 million of that, I would like to go to the Fetal Tissue Research Center, and $14 million I believe we should hold because, members, had I known, and I believe had many others known, that the university researched on aborted babies, I never would have voted to give them more money to expand their research capacity. Given this, I would like to hand it over to my testifiers, and I will just say, and I'll say this in my closing comments too, but I really do believe that this bill is a way for us to come together to work with the university. $1 million is a lot of money, and I think given other creative avenues that are happening in the scientific community, this is a great opportunity for the university. So I love research and would love to see us come together on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Whalen. And the first testifier that we have on the list is Representative Andre Jacques from Wisconsin. Is he here?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, is it all right if I have Brian Gibson testify first?
Whatever order you would like, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Gibson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Gibson. I'm the Executive Director of Pro-Life Action Ministries here in Minnesota. In the mid to late 1980s, several attempts to bring forward legislation regulating the disposition of the remains of aborted babies were made. Newspaper and other news stories of aborted babies being found in the St. Paul sewer system, abortion facilities regularly using commercial-grade garbage disposals to grind up and flush the remains of babies from abortions, and others had given impetus to seek passage of such legislation. On January 12, 1987, we found the remains, the bodies, of 13 aborted babies in the trash dumpster behind the abortion facility in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. These broken bodies ranged in size of a rib cage and spinal cord not much larger than a dime, approximated at about 6 weeks gestation, to larger than the palm of my hand, estimated to be about 18 weeks gestation. We held a press conference the next day to show the public these broken bodies that had been discarded as nothing more than garbage. 2 days later, we conducted a funeral service and a burial for these babies in as dignified manner as possible. In the 1987 legislative session, that very legislative session, a bipartisan bill was passed and then signed into law by the then DFL governor, the nation's first fetal disposal law. It was challenged all the way to the United States Supreme Court, where in July 1989, it was declared constitutional, becoming Minnesota law. The purpose of this precedent-setting legislation was to recognize the dignity of the human being in the remains after an abortion. This law does not allow for any other use of the human remains from abortion once cartilaginous structure is present, which is certainly before 6 weeks gestation, other than a dignified burial or cremation, with a very narrow exceptions being for holding the remains of these babies in cases of evidence of criminal activity, paternity termination, or for investigating disease or other medical abnormalities of the mother of the baby. Unfortunately, in the subsequent years, we have found it exceedingly difficult to find any state agency of Minnesota that would ensure compliance with this law. This summer's revelations at the University of Minnesota, in violation of this law, was experimenting on the remains of aborted babies and not disposing of them in accordance with this law came as a surprise. I strongly support House File 2865 so that compliance with long-standing constitutional Minnesota law takes place at our publicly funded university while allowing for ethical fetal tissue research. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gipton. Representative Whalen, who would you like to call up next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Andre Jacques.
Welcome to Minnesota, Representative Jacques. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony and let us know from what county and city you reside in the inferior state next door.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's great to be back in Minnesota. Actually, my wife is from Minnesota. Was able to stay with my in-laws last night, and always enjoy coming back here. I represent the 2nd Assembly District, which is 22 wonderful communities in southern Bowne and northern Manitowoc County in northeast Wisconsin, kind of stretching between the city of Green Bay and Manitowoc. So you're certainly welcome to visit anytime.
We welcome you, and I'm just kidding about the
Packers training camp is coming up, which happens to actually reside within the 2nd Assembly District.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thanks for the introduction. Please proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today in support of HF 2865, which ensures investment in ethical research opportunities while clearly reiterating high standards for the disposition of human remains to prevent their exploitation. I'm very appreciative of Representative Whalen's thorough and tireless efforts in bringing forward this legislation and for invitation to be here today. Respect for human dignity is essential in the performance of scientific research. As a UW-Madison undergraduate in the Medical Scholars Program, I heard a declaration from more than one professor that ethical questions about experimentation could be set aside and dealt with later, as long as there is great potential for medical breakthroughs. I remember that one of those professors later had his lab suspended because of unauthorized experiments with the bacterial infectant brucellosis. Unfortunately, such a philosophy can and has been also used throughout history to justify a great number of atrocities in the name of research. It was shortly after a professor related how the remains of dead children killed by the local abortionist, who also happened to retain his position on the UW Medical School faculty, were being regularly shuttled over to the UW for experimentation, that I began to rethink medical research as a career. The footage released last year by the Center for Medical Progress has raised awareness of legislation that I have introduced each of the last three sessions that I have been in the Wisconsin State Assembly to ban the sale, trafficking, and exploitation of tissue from aborted children. Contrary to common perception, the sale of aborted babies' body parts is not already outlawed by federal law unless it takes place across state lines. And to get around federal law and interstate sales, the statements by Planned Parenthood officials in the undercover videos make clear that abortion clinics simply extract their market price for the parts in the form of accumulated and very loosely regulated, perhaps unregulated, reimbursement fees. In fact, STEM Express, which partners with Planned Parenthood at several clinics, clearly and repeatedly promises profits in exchange for aborted baby body parts in flyers sent to Planned Parenthood affiliates. Even microbiologist Nathalia Holt, in writing a New York Times essay condoning experimentation on aborted children, openly acknowledges that harvesting human fetal organs is part of widespread and lucrative business, noting there are profits to be made by such middlemen in what critics call the abortion industry. A fetus runs upward of $850, not including testing, cleaning, or shipping charges, while a vial packed with pure stem cells can fetch more than $20,000. It is a grisly trade, which explains why Minnesota, as in Wisconsin, there has been so much effort to first deny its very existence and then subsequently claim the potential ends justify the unconscionable means used. I have heard many stories or denials from UW officials relating to the research that has been conducted and the efforts surrounding it that were substantially changed or completely backtracked days, weeks, or months later, often only after public information became available revealing their deception. What I'm starting to hear coming from the University of Minnesota seems all too familiar. During the 1990s, researchers at UW-Madison initiated several experiments utilizing aborted fetal body parts, but they are only more recently discovered through internal UW documents and research logs, including a thank you to former Madison abortionist Dr. Dennis Christensen for his provision of aborted babies to UW officials. It is deeply disturbing that as UW officials sought to open a late-term abortion clinic at the UW Surgery Center shortly before my election to the legislature, that the spokeswoman for UW Health publicly cited the potential for induced abortions at the facility to serve as a supply of fetal body parts for UW research. That was another impetus for my legislation. Those plans were scuttled initially due to public pressure and permanently by a provision I offered within the subsequent state budget. The UW at the time swiftly moved to walk back their spokeswoman's comments publicly and fraudulently, downplaying any such interest in local procurement of aborted tissue when it in fact was already occurring, and seeking to avoid any acknowledgement of their aborted fetal research practices. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has now stated that they do not offer tissue donation services. And at an assembly hearing, the dean of the UW Medical School, Dr. Robert Golden, also stated, "We do not receive our tissues from abortion clinics." What he didn't say, though, and what the UW Health has subsequently acknowledged, that the UW has received tissue directly from Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, at least as recently as 2011. It has surfaced that organs from many aborted babies were apparently harvested by UW faculty at the Madison Planned Parenthood Abortion Clinic between 2009 and 2011 for a UW-Madison study by 11 faculty members published in 2014, which details experimentation on 14 hearts and 10 brains of aborted children up to 20 weeks gestation. This was only finally admitted by the UW because a published version of the paper was located which gratefully acknowledged four UW faculty, two of whom also worked as abortionists at the Madison Planned Parenthood, for their support with tissue collection and processing. Planned Parenthood's medical director for their Madison abortion clinic at that time was UW professor Karen Dutton, and five other UW professors with prestigious positions were also employed at the time by Planned Parenthood, as indicated in Dr. Dutton's contract with Planned Parenthood, which purchased her hours from the UW. That MOU was signed by Dr. Robert Golden, the dean of the UW Medical School. That's right. UW personnel effectively counseled women, performed abortions on them, harvested the organs of their dead babies, and performed experiments on them. and had it approved by the UW Institutional Review Board, a member of which is the UW's most frequently used bioethics expert, who served on the National Planned Parenthood Medical Advisory Board. The increasingly discredited dean of the UW Medical School, Dr. Golden, also claimed last year that the UW needed to acquire tissue from aborted children specifically to develop a vaccine for the Ebola virus. In reality, a successful new vaccine against Ebola, RVSV-ZBOV, had already been broadly tested and found 100% effective, but it was developed using Vero, a monkey cell line, not aborted human tissue. As Representative Whalen already had mentioned, Rob Gunderman, who is the president of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin, has been in that role for 17 years, called me after the assembly hearing, just being shocked by Dr. Golden's testimony that somehow Alzheimer's was going to be cured by use of aborted fetal tissue. Most shockingly, during an assembly committee during a hearing on my similar legislation last year, Dr. Golden was specifically asked if any of the tissues used by the UW come from Stem Express or ABR, which were featured as the tissue procurement entities in the Planned Parenthood exposés. His answer was, "I have no way of knowing." Following the hearing, however, the UW finally acknowledged using ABR repeatedly and as one of their current suppliers. Stunningly, it was just uncovered earlier this year that the UW researcher, who has repeatedly been ordering aborted children's tissues from ABR, is none other than Dr. Golden's wife, making his past testimony even more implausible, if that were possible. A report last year by the Wisconsin Gannett Newspaper Group's investigative team also did a great service to readers in identifying that widespread research alternatives have come to dominate the field and discrediting the wildly inflated economic impact claims made to lawmakers by the UW with actual, accurate figures, pointing out little research is actually done with fetal tissue at UW-Madison, representing just a fraction of a percent of its research budget, and with no cures or successful treatments resulting, despite the false hopes and unsubstantiated claims peddled to desperate patients and their families. HF 2865 does not ban tissue donation or research. It encourages both to occur in responsible fashion. It does not prohibit any particular type of tissue from being experimented on, nor stop any particular method of experimentation. It only requires that the source of tissue that is experimented on cannot come from an induced abortion. Research on ethically derived fetal tissue has taken place for decades. Yet prior to 1992, research on aborted fetal tissue was not even eligible for NIH funding, for good reason. Experiments identical to those being conducted with aborted children's tissues could be performed with cells which could have been derived through ethical means if such an attempt had been made. From a research standpoint, there are equivalent or better sources of fetal material found in amniotic fluid, umbilical cord blood, and placental tissue with no ethical concerns. The Sacramento Business Journal last year reported that the stem cell program at UC Davis does not use any fetal tissues, so the university has not been involved with the issue directly, said Dr. Jan Nolte, director of the Stem Cell Program Institute for Regenerative Cures at UC Davis. We focus on adult stem cell therapies and have 10 of those in the clinic or recently completed, with 18 more in the pipeline, so we keep busy with those. There are many alternatives. Dr. Maureen Kondich, referenced by Representative Whalen, also writes, a search of the NIH-administered database of clinical trials for the terms fetal stem cell returns only 21 currently funded human trials, only two of which actually involve transplantation of fetal stem cells, compared with 5,072 trials using non-fetal cells. Science has indeed spoken, but not in support of fetal stem cell research. Those who experiment on aborted babies' body parts do it not because they have to, but because they can. Similarly, an August 3, 2015 Reuters article reports that at the Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, for instance, only about 10 out of 8,000 active research protocols involve fetal tissue. Some will say that research on aborted children should continue so that some good will come of it. A similar philosophy would justify the continuing occurrence of mass forced organ harvesting and transplantation from executed political prisoners to the well-connected, such as with the spiritual practitioners of Falun Gong in China. Several Wisconsin Falun Gong adherents, including their leadership, have contacted me in support of my legislation because they see the dangerous, slippery slope that aborted fetal tissue exploitation represents. While abortion may currently be legal in most circumstances, the intentional killing of a child through an induced abortion makes valid consent for research impossible. We have learned from history that when we devalue the dignity and worth of members of the human family, that any abuse is possible. Sickeningly, this has been extended to viewing aborted children as commodities, prizing the humanity of their tissues above that of the babies themselves. I ask for your support of HF 2865, and again, thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. We appreciate you being here, and if you could stick around if we have any other questions after the testifiers, we would greatly appreciate that. Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have both Dr. Feedy and Dr. Sandra Lee come to the testifying table.
And thank you for the committee again coming to the committee. And please introduce yourself in whatever order you'd like to proceed. And just to get an idea, the opening testimony went a little longer than I thought. Can you give me just a time frame of what you're thinking of for testimony time?
Both of us should take about 15 minutes. Okay. And then we're the last ones.
All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dean, Vice Chairman McDonald, and honored members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present testimony in support of HF 2865, to make Minnesota a leader in biomedical research using non-controversial sources for human fetal tissue. My name is Maria Feeney, and I received my PhD in pharmaceutical chemistry from the University of Kansas. I am currently studying diabetes as a research associate at the Medical College of Wisconsin. I am testifying in my personal capacity as a scientist, and my views do not represent the official position of the Medical College of Wisconsin. I became a scientist to serve humanity, to study the natural world in order to improve the human condition. In order to serve humanity, we must work in a way that preserves and promotes the dignity of each and every member of the human race, without discrimination on the basis of age, ability, developmental stage, or level of dependence. And so, HF 2865 is very much a pro-science bill. It promotes the highest goals of science and of medical research. I believe in the power of scientists to overcome the many limitations that are constantly in our path to greater knowledge and to helping patients. We are confined by the available technology, the inherent limitations of each methodology and model system we employ, the expense of certain materials and equipment, and sometimes even by the immense volume of data we can produce in a single experiment, testing the limits of bioinformatics capabilities. And, thankfully, we are limited by ethical considerations, most of which have been put in place in response to great tragedies of the 20th century, such as the Tuskegee syphilis trials, experiments on prisoners of Nazi concentration camps, and the hepatitis experiments performed on disabled children at Willowbrook State School in New York. Today, we have institutional review boards to protect human subjects, institutional animal care and use committees to oversee research with animals, and departments of environmental health and safety to protect personal and public safety and our environment. When scientists come up against limitations, we answer with innovation, creativity, and resourcefulness. This is where we make breakthroughs, overcoming limitations and obstacles to move our fields forward. I have confidence in the brilliance of scientists to rise to this challenge, to find a way forward that adheres to the highest possible ethical and moral standards, beyond reproach and above the political fray. HF 2865 initiates such a path by establishing a fetal tissue research center dedicated to providing tissues only obtained following the natural death of the fetus. Why should we be concerned if this bill does not pass? History is repeating itself as we exploit one group of human beings, the preborn, for the benefit of another group. In cases of induced abortion, it is impossible to obtain valid, informed consent from the fetus or from a guardian acting in the best interest of the fetus. Second, I am concerned for the mother considering an abortion who is in a vulnerable position and given false hope that her act of abortion will help cure disease. For example, a Planned Parenthood consent form for donating aborted tissue makes false claims that, quote, Tissue that has been aborted has been used to treat and find a cure for diseases such as diabetes, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and AIDS. This is coercion because no such cures exist that depend on fetal tissues. Instead, this helps to further legitimize the mother's choice to have an abortion. My final concern is that certain abortion-derived materials have become so widespread throughout biomedical research that it's difficult to avoid them. And if we continue to use tissues from today's induced abortions, this problem will only become worse. We are already forcing out scientists who have conscientious objections to this practice and leaving patients with fewer and more options if they wish to refuse treatments developed using abortion-derived materials. I also note that a market exists for abortion-derived materials, which can be requested or ordered from government-sanctioned repositories and private companies, with costs often listed directly on their websites. Every request for and purchase of these products by scientists creates incentives, financial and otherwise, for greater cooperation between tissue procurement organizations and abortion providers. Therefore, I believe it is impossible to sever the connection between use of abortion-derived materials in research and the act of abortion itself. In contrast, HF 2865 could put Minnesota at the forefront of providing non-controversial sources of fetal tissue. Anywhere that legal restrictions go into place or researchers wish to avoid controversial materials, they will seek out the alternatives available at the University of Minnesota. And institutions will want to model their tissue banks after the high ethical standards set here. In keeping with the University of Minnesota's mission, be driven to discover what is possible when we work on common ground. Be driven to discover the best practices in tissue banking with donated miscarriage tissues. Lead the way. Be the gold standard. Science has only scratched the surface of what is possible with tissue from fetuses who have died of natural causes. Very few researchers have invested time and resources in this area, and yet one team of investigators has already found ways to significantly improve viable tissue recovery. Imagine what is possible if we commit to moving forward on this common ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Feeney, for your testimony, and welcome to the committee, Dr. Lee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, thank you. My name is Tara Sander Lee. I am the Associate Professor of Pathology at the Medical College of Wisconsin and Scientific Director of Molecular Diagnostics at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. To the distinguished chair, Representative Matt Dean, and the honorable members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify before you today about the importance of establishing a fetal tissue research center at the University of Minnesota that would provide oversight on the ethical procurement and use of fetal tissue at the university. The opinions expressed here are my own and do not represent the official position of my institution. I just want to give you some background on my experience. I have 20 years of experience studying the pathologic basis of disease with an emphasis on inherited genetic disorders in children. I earned a PhD in biochemistry from the Medical College of Wisconsin. I completed postdoctoral training in cell and molecular biology at Harvard Medical School, which focused on mechanisms of cardiac valve development and vascular disease. This work was continued at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where I directed a research lab for 5 years. As part of these studies, we obtained discarded heart valve tissue from children undergoing surgical procedures to repair their congenital defect. This tissue was then used to identify key pathways involved in heart development. I am currently conducting research on SIDS, where we obtain postmortem tissue from autopsies to detect genetic variants that contribute to unexplained death in children. I also direct a molecular diagnostics lab in pathology and laboratory medicine that performs clinical testing using various specimen types for the diagnosis and treatment of children with disease. As such, I am testifying as a scientist with firsthand knowledge that ethical human tissue sources exist and are available for conducting successful research. I want to begin by defining the term fetal tissue, because it's been used a lot today. Fresh fetal tissue is material procured from a baby that died from an induced abortion or from a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage. Cells can be isolated from fetal tissues and used for research as well, either as primary cells or established cell lines that may be cultured indefinitely, such as the HEK293 cell line, which was established from human embryonic kidney cells of an aborted fetus. Several investigators use cell lines established from induced abortions. Even though I would like to see these cells replaced with alternatives, I want to make the clear distinction that, to the best of my knowledge, this bill would not impact investigators currently conducting research using cell lines such as HEK-293 from induced abortions. According to the recent Huron report, this bill only impacts 8 current faculty at the University of Minnesota that are using or have used since January 1, 2010, fetal tissue for research. Nationwide, NIH budgeted over $30 billion to research, and only 0.25% of this funding is allocated to fetal tissue research. Therefore, research using fresh fetal tissue is not as universal as many may think. The establishment of this center will provide an opportunity for these few investigators to continue conducting fetal tissue research through the procurement of fetal tissue from miscarriages while satisfying ethical concerns. For those that claim research will stop and discoveries delayed if limitations are placed on fetal tissue research, it needs to be clear that no current medical treatments exist that have required research using fetal tissues from induced abortions for their discovery or development. Even Dr. Goldstein, who is the director of the UC San Diego Stem Cell Program and actively conducts research using fetal tissue from induced abortion, stated in response to his testimony at the recent federal hearing for the U.S. House of Representatives Select Investigative Panel on March 2nd that he is, quote, not aware of any therapies that have been definitively solved using fetal tissue, end of quote. There is ample evidence in support of how ethical tissue sources and research have made significant advancements in science. For example, blood is a rich source of treatment for leukemia, lymphoma, and various genetic diseases of the blood. This treatment is commonly referred to as a bone marrow transplant, where adult stem cells from a donor's bone marrow are transplanted into another patient with disease. The production of biologic therapies and vaccines has also proven to be successful using non-fetal sources. Examples include the use of bacteria to develop insulin for diabetes and Chinese hamster ovary cells to develop Herceptin for breast cancer. Several vaccines exist in the U.S. that are also made with non-fetal cell lines, including hepatitis B, Tdap, flu, and meningitis. Unfortunately, some manufacturers have not invested the time or money needed to produce ethical versions of vaccines, especially in light of the heavily regulatory burden that exists for such changes. And for this reason, all MMR, chickenpox, and hepatitis A vaccines available in the U.S. are still made with cells from aborted babies. So what compels researchers to pursue fetal tissue? The cells from fetal tissue are considered valuable because they divide rapidly, adapt to new environments easily, are less susceptible to rejection than adult cells when transplanted, and consist of specific cell types, such as astrocytes used in the study of Alzheimer's. An investigator that desires to work with fetal tissue has the choice to either obtain fetal tissue from induced abortions that is readily available through procurement organizations such as STEM Express and Advanced Bioscience Resources, or from spontaneous abortions and ectopic pregnancies. The first choice is morally objectionable and wrought with ethical concerns. The second choice, to use tissue from miscarriages, is an ethical solution. However, this type of tissue is not as readily available commercially, which is why this bill creates an outstanding opportunity for the University of Minnesota to establish such a center. Those opposed to using fetal tissue for miscarriages argue that an insufficient amount of suitable tissue would be available for certain studies, such as transplantation. Several papers published by Dr. Maria Macheda at Georgetown University School of Medicine outline very clearly that spontaneous miscarriages are a useful and ethical alternative source of fetal stem cells for hematopoietic cell transplantation, and other labs have agreed with her findings. An additional report characterized 12 and 18-week-old fetuses from spontaneous abortions and was able to study key cells involved in brain development. Another study was recently conducted using fetal tissues from both induced and spontaneous abortions side by side. Other arguments against the use of fetal tissue for miscarriages include the unknown time of death and possible genetic abnormalities. In regard to timing, numerous reports, together with Dr. Macheda's epidemiological studies, have indicated that over 15% of the 300,000 second trimester miscarriages studied were suitable for transplantation, which has some of the most rigorous requirements for tissue viability. In response to genetic concerns, a fetus can appear normal until an inherent genetic abnormality manifests itself after birth. In fact, birth defects are the leading cause of infant deaths, accounting for 20% of all infant deaths. So like miscarriages, fetal tissue from induced abortions can also carry genetic abnormalities. In addition, the use of the abortion drug mifepristone, or RU486, and prostaglandins for the medical termination of pregnancy may substantially reduce the availability of human fetal tissues from induced abortions. Furthermore, if there are concerns that tissues from miscarriages are not normal, comprehensive screening tools are available and can be used to identify relevant genetic abnormalities. I believe the University of Minnesota is poised to make an important decision that will impact generations to come. You have a unique opportunity to establish a nationally renowned fetal tissue center that would focus on ethical procurement of tissue for research. I am excited by this possibility and encourage you to pass this bill from both a moral and scientific perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else from the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, we'll close off the testimony portion of the committee and go to member questions. First question is from Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for the physicians, or the doctors, excuse me. Welcome to Minnesota from a former cheesehead, now proud Minnesotan. It's an interesting debate that we're having.
Yeah, so my husband's from Minnesota, so I have it every day.
This is a very frustrating issue for me that we're having this hearing in the Health and Human Services Committee. And I think it should be clear at the start that this is not the University of Minnesota asking to become this leader, but instead a legislator asking to punish the University of Minnesota for something that she believes that they've done wrong. And I think that conversation should really be happening in the Higher Ed Committee and not in the Health and Human Services Committee. But I did want to just ask a question because I'm a little confused by the testimony that I got from the two of you. Because as I listened to Dr. Feeney, I believe it was Dr. Feeney, maybe it was Dr. Lee, talking about the materials from Planned Parenthood and the idea that asking for consent about a fetal tissue donation would serve as coercion because there hasn't been any cure resulting from the donation of fetal tissue, leads me to believe that you don't see promise in treatment or cure from the use of fetal tissue in research. And I also heard that the use of fetal tissue from a spontaneous, from a spontaneous abortion would serve as material useful in the pursuit of treatment and cure in research. So I'd like to know from your perspective if fetal tissue is or is not a source of research for the treatment and cure of disease in the future.
So I believe you're asking about why I'm pointing out that consent form is being coercive.
No, I'm asking.
Well, that's Mr. what you started Chair. With, so may Mr. I please Chair. Respond to that, that claim?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that very much. I want to be very clear with my question. Because you asserted coercion, but you said that it was because that the fetal tissue served no purpose in terms of treatment or cure.
I did not say that.
Excuse me. You're probably not used to testifying,
but I'm sorry.
They generally talk through the chair. So if Representative Murphy will address me and the question to you, you can address me and back, but there's to avoid that kind of dialogue. So that's what we do, it just to kind of keep things rolling smoothly along. Representative Murphy.
So maybe let me just say this. Is fetal tissue a source of research in the treatment and cure of disease?
Fetal tissue has not been used and required to develop any successful cures or therapies in existence now.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From your perspective as a scientist, do you know if we have learned everything that we will ever know in science? Are we
certainly
at the
not.
Edge? There you go, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, and to our guests from Wisconsin, I think that it would be a false statement to say that fetal tissue will not serve the purpose of treatment or cure of disease in the future. Is that an accurate statement?
I did not say that. This would be my answer to that.
It's right now, it's not known. Nobody can see the future. But we know from years of trying that there have been no successful treatments that require these tissues. And so the point is that for those few investigators that are out there, and, you know, we gave University of Minnesota as an example, 8 investigators, and even across the nation, it's only a few, it's about, you know, 0.25%. They feel that they absolutely need those cells to conduct their studies. And for those, miscarriages do then serve then as an ethical alternative, that then you do not have to get into ethical concerns because these tissues are available. And it's an under-investigated line of research as far as miscarriages are concerned because there's been so much focus on the fresh tissue from induced abortions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, but I think it's important for us to be clear about whether or not there's promise in the future in terms of treatment and disease using fetal tissue.
But the ends don't justify the means. That's how I would answer that.
And
just because to exploit one group of human beings for another, that's not ethically right.
Dr. Lee, if we could just kind of go back to going through the chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry. And I know it seems awkward and unusual, but that's just the way we have to do it to sort of stay on track.
Yeah.
Representative Murphy.
I really appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and you're doing such a nice job on a really tough topic. Because I think it is important for us, and it's important for the University of Minnesota, and it's important for the people that we represent, that we pursue the research necessary to treat and prevent diseases in the future. And so while I understand you're asserting your ethical view on our consideration of research, it is just one ethical view. And there, as you know and I know, multiple ethical constructs in the way that we think through biomedical research. And I appreciate your point of view, and I hope you appreciate mine. But as an important foundation here, not the ethics, not the whether the ends justify the means, but just as an important point of science, if we have not discovered everything yet in human existence, then I think we have to be clear that fetal tissue can serve as a research instrument in pursuit of cure and treatment of disease. And I think we just have to use that as a foundation here, step away from the ethical argument, which I know you want to assert, but just stick with the pure science in the first place as a foundation for this debate. That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And Dr. Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are ethical standards for both the university in Wisconsin and in Minnesota on ethics and how we proceed with research. For example, animal research, if there is a way to do research without harming an animal, you do it without harming an animal. And if there's actually an order of decision making where you try to do that so that you would use a less complex animal if possible to get the outcome, and you balance your decision making on the ethics of that based on the potential research that you get. And from my reading of this, from just a simple reading, is that there's an ethical line being drawn between spontaneous abortions versus elective abortions, and maybe we want to just kind of just say what those are. They're technical terms, and maybe a lot of people don't understand the difference of that. Could you maybe just draw out that distinction, and am I getting that right?
Right. That's correct. So the ethical distinction is that in the situation for an induced abortion, the child had no say in consent of its body being used for research. And for a spontaneous abortion, that happened naturally. It was the natural course of death of that child. There was nothing that was done intentionally to harm that child. And so that's where the ethical line is drawn, that in one case harm was intentionally done, and in another it was not.
Thank you for the distinction. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to apologize to my testifiers and to the committee that I'll take the blame. I did not go over committee procedure in going through the chair. So that's my fault, and I do apologize, Representative Murphy, Chair Dean, for that confusion.
Well, 9 times out of 10, it's the members that break the rules, so don't have to worry about that. Don't apologize. And we were very happy to have you. Thank you for coming. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate the conversation that Representative Murphy started here. This dialogue has actually taken turns that I didn't expect it to take today. And so I want to back up because I think that since we're talking about science, dealing with the facts is incredibly important. And a number of testifiers have referenced videos that put out by this group called the Center for Medical Process, which has been deemed to be a sham organization. The videos have been widely discredited by numerous sources, and almost over a dozen states now have investigated the Planned Parenthood in their state, and 201, they have found no wrongdoing and no quote-unquote market or selling of fetal tissue. I think that's really important for us to say. These are states' attorney generals that have made this findings. In fact, the only charges, the only illegal activity that has been brought up with regard to those videos were, in fact, the people who took the videos from the Center of Medical Process. Those are the only charges that have been brought up with regard to these videos in over a dozen states. So if we are using that as a basis to say the University of Minnesota cannot continue with life-saving research, we are basing this conversation on the wrong premise because we're basing it on something that has been proven repeatedly to be false. I want that to be clearly in the record because it's been talked about as fact and it's not fact. The other thing that I want to say is I'm very distressed about the conversation around it's only going to affect a few lines of research. And I bet there isn't a person sitting in this room or sitting around this table that cares deeply about the research that's going on at our world-class research institution in Minnesota. This is an emotional issue. We are looking for cures to diseases that take our family members away from us. We have held dying relatives' hands as they've died from cancer. I suffer from type 1 diabetes. I had a day this week where I woke up and I was glad I did because I was very close to not waking up in the morning. And being a mom, I am very careful and I take really good care of myself, but there isn't a moment of my day that isn't spent managing diabetes. And I know there are other people, you know, it's like a hidden disease. You don't get to see it. You don't know that we have it. But there isn't a moment of my day that isn't spent managing it. And many of us suffer silently. Many of us are supporting family members. We have people who have lost family members twice when we see Alzheimer's patients, Parkinson's patients, where they lose their ability to communicate with their loved one and then have to suffer through their loved one's long and agonizing death again. And these are the people that we're talking about when we talk about cutting off research at our world-class university. And the thought that it's just a few lines of research and it's not going to matter is frankly saddening to me. I could maybe even use stronger words. It frankly makes me angry because this research is important. And the thought of that we're doing research in these neat little boxes that we do fetal tissue research here and we do bacterial research here, and we do stem cell research here. None of that is true in science. And there have been scientific discoveries throughout history that have been surprises. And I think penicillin is a good example. They weren't looking to cure bacterial diseases when penicillin was discovered. They were growing mold in a lab. And so that is not the way research happens. It isn't linear, and it isn't in a box. It's about smart people in our country sharing information, going down paths that they didn't know they were going to be going down because of discoveries. And the fact that we are going to take away resources that this legislature deemed was important enough to increase our university's ability to find causes and to find cures for diseases that are killing Minnesotans and killing people in this country is appalling to me, particularly if we're going to base it on an issue that has been discredited and is not true. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, at first, I do want to say I appreciate your acknowledgement that we all have family members who've suffered from various diseases, and I'm so sorry to hear your own story. As I mentioned, I have a family member right now battling cancer, given 12 to 16 months to live. She's participating in a clinical research trial at the University of Minnesota. So again, I want to work with the university, but there are ethical ways and good ways to do research, and included in your packets is testimony from Dr. David Prentice, who I think says it better than I could. But I'm just going to read a couple excerpts about fetal tissue research. He says, there's no sound scientific reason for the use of fetal tissue organs and body parts from induced abortion, and the practice of this raises significant ethical problems. And if you go to the next page, he says, between 1988 and 1994, roughly 140 Parkinson's disease patients received fetal tissue, up to 6 fetuses per patient, with varying results, and subsequent reports show that severe problems developed from these transplants. One patient who received fetal brain tissue from a total of 3 fetuses died subsequently, and an autopsy was found to have various non-brain tissues like skin tissue, hair, cartilage, and other tissues growing in his brain. In 2001, the first report of a full clinical trial funded by NIH using fetal tissue for Parkinson's patients was prominently featured in the New York Times, with doctors' descriptions of patients writhing, twisting, and jerking with uncontrollable movements. The doctors described the result as absolutely devastating, tragic, catastrophic, and labeled the results a real nightmare. I could go on, but I encourage you to read that for yourself. And then he goes into successful alternatives, lots of successful alternatives, including over 1 million patients who have been treated with adult stem cells. And so my point is that money spent on induced aborted research is money not spent on these other proven, more successful avenues of research.
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Whalen. You referenced the psychiatric department quite a bit in your opening comments, and that early on last year, Representative Zerwas and I brought this to the attention of the entire legislature, and it wasn't too popular for us to do so at the time, but we knew something wasn't quite right. What in your bill addresses the issue at the psychiatric department? Because I don't see that in there at all.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing that issue forward last year. I actually had drafted a bill last year and time got away from me that would have enforced the second recommendation from the OLA report that now Representative Cindy Pugh is carrying. And so I brought it up in my testimony today to illustrate the larger issue I believe that is at play within the leadership culture of the university.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
Representative Whalen, it seems that if you're disturbed about research, then cover the entire research department, but you've selected one area that, to my knowledge, no whistleblowers have come forward to say that there's memos and internal memos to say that there's wrongdoing, or do you have any of those testifiers here today? Because I've met with the folks from the psychiatric department, and you don't have any staff from the U and their clinical research department or folks here today. Do they exist?
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've met with the Vice President of Research. I've met with regents at the university. I've also... And I'd encourage you to read it. There's an article from the Star Tribune who did an investigation into this, and their conclusions, I quoted it, were also implicating that the research department is not necessarily always being very forthright. They're not doing the deep digging that they need to do. And combine that with the OLA report, I think that in this area, it's important that we act and we move.
Representative Schoen.
Well, you know, Representative Whalen, I'll tell you, this is an area that's near and dear to me, too. And quite gets old to have this fight all the time. My stepdad has Parkinson's, and he was a small-town fire chief, toughest guy I knew. And to see him today, I tell you, I'll fight for him every day and the potential for a cure in the future. And if that's fighting against you on this, it's going to happen. And I know that that puts us at odds, and I respect you for your convictions, but this is disappointing in this area that we don't look at sound science and what we can do for our family members in the future, because we don't know. A lot of unanswered questions. And I don't see this personally the same as other issues when we have people coming up here and trying to make a connection to the past research that's been done on minorities, been done on prisoners of war. To me, that's not the same. And I realize that we maybe have a difference there. But I'll tell you, I want my stepdad to know that I'm in his corner. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I wanted to note, and I think Representative Halverson kind of covered it, this issue, Representative Whalen, when you started out your testimony now quite a while back, you made the statement that no one is denying, something like, no one's denying that illegal buying of fetal tissue is taking place. And that is absolutely wrong. We are denying it. I am denying it. Because, you know, these films that you were referring to and all that has been completely debunked. Completely debunked. And yet, those that issue and those videos keep being brought up as though there's truth there. And that is absolutely not the case. So I wanted to ask you, Representative Whalen, are you an attorney? Mm-hmm.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
and Representative Whalen, well, in your testimony, you went through quite a bit of what sounded like legal analysis, and I don't know where you got all that legal analysis, but I have in front of me a legal analysis, and this legal analysis is from a highly respected law firm, Ropes and Gray, which I have been aware of for a number of years, as I myself went to law school in Boston quite a few years ago, and this is a Boston law firm. And they did an analysis for the University of Minnesota, for the Regents, in January of this year, and they have a 16-page report, which I suspect you've probably seen. And they go through a very exhaustive legal analysis, because the university wanted to know, have we done anything illegal in using tissue from induced abortions. And when you get through all of this extensive legal analysis, you get down to the end, and their conclusion is that there is no prohibition on fetal tissue research conducted on tissue from induced abortions under federal law. And they say, under Minnesota law, we also found no prohibition on fetal tissue research conducted on tissue from induced abortions. So, although you yourself went through some kind of legal analysis, I don't know where you got that from, but some pretty authoritative work has been done on this very question, and they have found, I think, pretty convincingly that no laws have been broken by the use of fetal tissue from induced abortions in Minnesota. So that really needs to be put to rest. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that you have just quoted or cited from some work by this person, David Prentice. And, I don't know a lot about David Prentice, but I understand we have his written testimony in our packets, and it's from this Charlotte Lozier, maybe I'm saying it wrong, but Charlotte Lozier Institute. And, this is clearly, this is an institute, this is not an objective person. This is a person who's putting forward his written testimony definitely to put his thumb on one side of the scale. And I have here something from the website of that institute, and it says the mission of this is, I won't read it, but it just goes on that it's basically an anti-abortion organization. And, you know, that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinions, but I think it's just important to know that this is not an objective scientist, but somebody who's an advocate for the cause of ending abortions, who's giving this written testimony. And again, that's fine as long as we're honest about, you know, the where that's coming from. But I don't think there can be any real question that Ropes and Gray, who did this very extensive legal analysis, is correct. I mean, you can always debate. I guess legal issues aren't always cut and dried, you know, but they are doing this for the university to advise them about whether their practices were legal. And with regard to following at least whether fetal tissue from induced abortions can be used in Minnesota, the answer is very clearly yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I know that that probably, despite your proclamation, probably isn't the last word on it. We found out last week that the legislative auditor is going to be examining this, and he will examine the adherence to federal law, to state law, and also to University of Minnesota practices for oversight and for transparency. So we look forward to that, and I'm sure that's a very good law firm. I've never heard of it. I'm not an attorney, but I always like to read what attorneys write because I like the way they write. Representative Liebling.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also would like a roll call on the bill.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Whalen, for bringing this bill forward, and I also want to thank the two scientists, Dr. Lee and Dr. Finney, for your fine testimony. I found it very informative and interesting. I did not hear in your testimony that you're against research.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's true.
Okay. what I heard in your testimony is, you know, natural abortions or miscarriages could easily be used for any type of research, that we don't need the supply of induced abortions and the buying and selling of baby parts. And so to me, what this issue boils down to is, do we have ethical guidelines for research or don't we? Okay? And if we don't want ethical guidelines for research, especially on human beings, then we align ourselves with some of the worst atrocities in human history. Because as the comment was made, we can't exploit one set of people for the benefit of another set. And yet that's been done through history numerous times. So I applaud your testimony that you want ethical guidelines. And I think that's what we're trying to set here and what Representative Whalen's bill tries to do. Is there, you know, are we totally convinced that the university is doing this? I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, okay? But even with that, I think with the Representative Whalen's bill, we set ourselves on a course of having strong ethical limitations in relationship to the experimentation on unborn children. And that's why I support the bill. The other thing, we've had a lot of advances in medical science. And one of the things we now know compared to 1973 when abortion was legalized is that life begins at conception. Medical science has proven that life begins with conception. Dr. Lee and Dr. Finney, would you agree with that statement?
Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would absolutely agree with that statement.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that to be true. I happened to be there when I was conceived. No, just kidding. The other thing I'd like to say, the more you study the abortion-induced industry, the more you realize it's built on a series of lies. The testimony from the good representative from Wisconsin, even though he's close to Green Bay, I'll forgive you for that, illustrated the number of lies that were being told in Wisconsin about this issue. If we go back to the origin of the Roe v. Wade decision, we see that Norma McCovey was lied to, the Jane Doe and Roe v. Wade, was lied to get her to sign as a plaintiff. So the more you study the induced abortion industry, you realize that it's all built on lies. And finally, I'd say this in terms of discrediting some of the videos that were shown. We know the abortion industry is a billion-dollar industry. We also know that billion-dollar industries, when things are exposed about them to the public that is negative, will use a lot of their money to discredit the source of the people who expose the problem. Now, that's not just true with the abortion industry. It can be true with other industries, too. So when you're a billion-dollar industry, you have a lot of power politically and legally to try to destroy people who are exposing the lies about what you're actually doing in the industry. So to the degree that your testimony has helped us understand that and shed light on this issue, I thank you, and I strongly support Representative Whalen's bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And before we let you sneak back to Wisconsin, I just had one question for Representative Jacques. And I know you're kind of wrestling with the same thing we are in Wisconsin that we are here in Minnesota. We've got a Huron report from the university, which we greatly appreciate, and also the legislative auditor has announced that he's going to be looking at this. We're kind of wrestling around with ethical issues. As you've kind of obviously, you prepared your remarks to come to Minnesota today. I thought about it in the car when you drove over. Just what are your thoughts and very quick, any recommendations, thoughts, or analysis that you might have for us going forward just based on the experience that you have had and are having in Wisconsin on the identical issue?
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. It's these are weighty issues that we're wrestling with, and certainly the lack of transparency can be troubling, the sort of thing that we have been dealing with in Wisconsin, where we've been told one thing and something new shows up on the front page. Certainly, we have a very trusted legislative audit bureau in Wisconsin. I assume you have the same professionalism here, so I certainly think that would be welcomed. And I think any time that you're talking about research ethics, there are always going to be those that don't want to set the walls any higher. Of course, we already have issues where there are medical trials more frequently being conducted outside of the U.S. rather than here in the country, just because we place restrictions, and for good reason, than what they would have to adhere to in a third world country or in South America. And I think it just is going to be something where I would encourage your legislature to take a look at, what sort of precedent are you looking to set? Because in making the law, we are imposing values, whether that's in public safety, whether that is in our tax structure. And, I think that clearly there are issues that have been brought forward about the inadequacy of the current federal law and the way that that was first brought to bear. You do have this amalgamation of fees, and I think in part that's why you've seen so many states that have already moved swiftly to address this issue, in part because if something is not is legal but clearly is unethical, you want to change the law to close that loophole. I think there's been some reference to the videos. I think that's a process that we should allow to play out, because I think you're clearly going to see the Center for Medical Progress exonerated in the whistleblowing that has taken place. The unedited videos are clearly available. And you also have individuals that are on those tapes from Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains or elsewhere that are talking about the ways that they are seeking to get around being caught for their wrongdoing, even as in some cases they actually admit it. So I'm kind of long-winded, so I apologize. I could probably go on for a while here. But
long car ride over. We appreciate you making the trip and appreciate the good work that you're doing in Manitowoc County?
Brown County, the city of De Pere, just south of Green Bay. And I do want to thank the Minnesota legislature. I actually just had a bill signed yesterday that was passed by the Minnesota legislature last session, signed into law dealing with hit and run. So I appreciate your leadership on that.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, and thank you, Representative Whalen, for bringing this forward. And, you know, I understand. Right. We have to end at 2:30, don't we? So I understand the emotion. But I personally, my belief in all this is that I don't want my health to improve at the expense of another life, especially when they don't have a say in the matter. And that's my belief, right? One of the things as it pertains to this debate, when I first, when this first came to light, I said, the leadership in the University of Minnesota, my initial reaction was, either they're lying to us or they're incompetent. And then I stepped back and I said, I know many of these people and they're not bad people in these leadership roles. And so then, have we identified an area where it does lack transparency and communication? So for that, I'm grateful, because I think some good can come out of this as well. One of the concerns I do have with the bill is that, in my opinion, good intentions could potentially have unintended consequences as well. Meaning, the way I read it and the way I understand it is that this could potentially remove money away from, or take money away from the medical discovery teams. And I believe they're working on addiction and aging and brain imaging and rural health disparities and whatnot as well. And so that's my concern. Every single one of us are passionate around this issue. And I just want to make sure that we're thinking this through too. I fully agree with your concerns. Absolutely I do, because I shared my position on this as well. But I want to make sure that we also take a step back and make sure that we don't have these harsh unintended consequences as well. So but thank you very much for bringing it up.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Whalen, final thoughts on your bill briefly, and then we're going to go to a vote. We have to be concluded at 2:30.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. I really appreciate that. To just quickly address the money that we will be taking away until they establish the research center, it will be reappropriated in fiscal 18 once the center is fully operational and they're Board of Regents certifies to the Commissioner of Management and Budget that that's the case. So they currently have $15 million that the medical research teams are using. We're not touching that. This is $15 million that has not been released yet, and that, if released, could potentially go to aborted fetal tissue research. They can use that for their medical expansion. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the conversation again and the opportunity to present this bill. A few final thoughts. I will direct you again to some of the written testimony, and the comment was made about Dr. Prentice and his potential biases, but I would ask the question, what specific statements are biased and what specific statements are fact? Because what I read, that's all fact and verifiable within other articles and other research. He's very thorough. So with that, I also would like to just close with a statement from Dr. Kelvin, who is actually a physician and a clinical associate professor at the university, co-chair of the Program of Health and Human Rights at the School of Public Health. He's served for 26 years in various roles at the University of Minnesota. And he says, regardless of one's personal convictions and position on elective abortion, there are major legal, ethical, and public policy problems with the university's use of organs of aborted fetuses in research. And he goes on to say that he was a decade ago involved in the debate on human embryos for research, and at that time the public was told that cures for many diseases is required research on human embryos, cures were only years away, and even if made in good faith, those claims were exaggerated and proved to be untrue. Those who opposed research on human embryos and the body parts of aborted fetuses are not opposed to science and research. We enthusiastically support the university and its faculty and the excellent research that is done there in an ethical manner. And so I'm still reading from him. He's personally worked with researchers at the University Stem Cell Institute on various projects. And so I would just like to say again, I'm for research done ethically within the bounds of the law. And I began with a quote from William Wilberforce. So it seems fitting to me that I might close with a quote from another individual that I look up to. And sorry, before I do that too, I did want to make the point that I never said that the university, I was rereading my comments from just the beginning, that it's regardless of your feelings on the videos or on abortion, which I'm happy to address later as we're running out of time, no one's denying that the buying and selling of the aborted baby parts is occurring. Whether you think that's illegal or not illegal, that's what I said, that it is occurring, the buying and selling is occurring. So, but to go back to my statement, I wanted to close with a quote from someone that I look up to as well. It's Hubert Humphrey. He actually has a school named after him at the University of Minnesota, my alma mater. And he said, you know, the moral test of government is how we treat those that are in the dawn of life, the unborn, in the throes of life, those that are sick, and then also those that are the elderly in the sunset of life. And notably, Hubert Humphrey was pro-life. And so when he says those that are in the dawn of life, I'm pretty certain he's including the unborn in that. And it really just in his legacy at the University of Minnesota, I really hope and want to implore the university to continue coming to the table and working with me on this bill and establishing a way we can do this research ethically. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Whalen. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Dean.
Yes.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Yes.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Loeffler.
No.
Representative Allen. Representative Backer.
Yes.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Helverson.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Lohmer.
Yes.
Representative Mack.
Yes.
Representative Murphy. Representative Purcell. Representative Pearson.
Yes.
Representative Schoen.
No.
Representative Schumacher. Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
No.
All right, there being 10 ayes and 6 noes, House File 2865 is referred to the Committee on Higher Education as amended. Always remember. Thank you. Thank you, testifiers, and Representative Whalen for your bill. And with that, no other business. We are adjourned. Thank you, members.